Call the Regulated Industries Committee to order. Representative Wagenius moves the approval of the minutes from last Wednesday's meeting. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Minutes are approved. First up is House File 2151. We're going to bring back from the table, but members, let me just explain a little process. I met with Senator Kelly today. This is the bill that we're going to try to add at least some of the other provisions to be able to have a bill that will match up with the Senate. So we'll review the third-party billing amendment and add that on, and then lay it over, and try to incorporate the next two bills of Mike, Representative Beard, in this, and then depending upon what the other next two, Gunther and
who's the other?
Gunther and Beard. Oh, the next two bills of Gunther and Beard's, if they're not too controversial, we'll add them in. If they are, we'll just send them on their own way. Or vote them down, I guess, is another option that can happen. So so that's kind of the process, and then we'll bring back up 2151 with at least two of the others hopefully incorporated into it, and that would be the bill that will match up with the Senate's bill for telecom issues. And so with that, I'll renew a motion to approve House File 2151 and send it to the floor, the general register. And I'm going to first call up the Attorney General's office. So we'll call the Attorney General's office up just to explain the new amendment. But first I'm going to move the A2 amendment, which changes the word carrier to a person, just to clarify or broaden who it would apply to in the first bill. So is there any questions on that first A2 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, same sign. Amendment passes. Next, we'll move the A6 amendment to be approved and incorporated and amend House File 2151. The chair will move that. And this one, we're going to have discussion on. So why don't we let the Mr. Marker explain what he seen as a compromised amendment, and we'll go from there. Thanks. Mr. Marker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon, members of the committee. Pete Marker for the Attorney General's office. There have been substantial meetings between my office, the department, and members of the industry on the third-party billing bill amendment. And we believe that agreement has been reached on the terms, and that's the amendment that you have before you. The amendment requires that any third-party service provider gain the express authorization of the customer before they may bill on the local telephone bill for any third-party service or good on the local telephone bill. And the amendment still allows the customer who sees an unauthorized charge on their local telephone bill to contact their local telephone company or provider to have that charge removed unless evidence of authorization can be produced by the local telephone company. The amendments otherwise are substantially consistent with the prior version of this matter that was before you. One thing that we could not get straightened out is the long-distance cancellation piece of this bill. You'll recall, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that part of this amendment was a provision that affected the long-distance cancellation. And that has met with, I guess, what would best be described as technological problems from the industry and others. We're hoping to work that out and bring that forth in the future, but we didn't want those problems to drag down this piece of the bill, which we view to be as a substantial consumer protection measure. So, Mike, do you have any other?
Mr. Chair,
Mr. Bull, Mike, could you offer your perspective?
From the Department of Commerce. Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. The one thing I wanted to say is to thank we had a 2.5-hour meeting on Friday afternoon late at the Department of Commerce working through this with the folks from the Attorney General's office and the industry. And especially on this issue, the third-party billing issue, I want to thank the folks for showing up and how much goodwill was in the room to work this out. And so I think that this is a very good piece of legislation. I think it's a lot of the intended consequences are worked out, and most of the unintended consequences as well. On the long distance cancellation piece, as Pete said, I don't think there was opposition in the room to doing something on the long distance cancellation. That we went round and round on a few alternatives. But we kept running into more technical problems on how the flows of communications go between long-distance companies and local companies. And so we need to be more, I think, careful how we draft that. So we'll continue to work on that piece of this puzzle.
Okay, thank you. I guess from both your perspective, was most everyone was able to sign off and was satisfied with this amendment in front of us,
Mr. Chair? That's my understanding. There are a couple of details here and there, such as the number of months you can go back for a refund. We support 6 months, as the Attorney General's office. Some folks argued for a shorter time period, but I think that's where we. I don't know if anyone will raise that with you today. I'm not sure it was that big enough of a deal. One thing we did add to the bill is to preserve the right of the telephone company to go back to the service provider to recover the amount of that refunded charge, to preserve those legal rights that they might have. So that might take care of that issue.
Thank you. Is there anybody in the audience that's opposed to the amendment? Any questions from the committee? Seeing none, I guess we'll take a vote on the A6 amendment. All those in favor of the A6 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Amendment passes.
Mr. Chair? I do have an outstanding issue that we raised with the group on Friday, but we didn't have all those players in the room that I thought we needed to take it up. And that was the expanding, the way the bill is drafted now, which we do support, is focused on local telephone, on your local telephone bill. But I think that if you plug this hole, that there's a possibility that things are going to expand into other telecommunications bills. So I announced at the meeting on Friday that we're interested in expanding this bill to any provider of telecommunications services, which would include wireless, and nobody from wireless was in the meeting. And I wanted to raise that I think there's an amendment drafted to do this expansion, but I wanted to put it out on the record, our intent to broaden this out on the record, so that if you wanted to hear from folks on that issue.
Not today, I don't. But
okay.
you're talking in the future, right?
Sure.
Mr. Bull?
Yeah. And I wanted to let, part of what we're working to do over the next year is to try to put people on these various companies providing the same kinds of services on the same sort of footings, regulatory and legal-wise, and this is along the lines of doing working on that. So this could even be a next year sort of issue, but I wanted to let people know that's where we'll be going.
We'll keep it noted, and I think it might join up with just a couple other issues that might be up next year.
Very
so
good.
Good employment security for you guys and the lobbyists all summer and fall.
Lord knows I need it.
With that, I'll lay the House File 2151 over as amended for consideration with the following bills that we're going to be taking up. So it'll be laid on the table right now. Next, Representative Beard, House File 2517.
Chairman.
Representative Beard.
I'm prepared to present House File 2517.
First of all, let's move House File 2517 for consideration to be approved by the Regulated Industries Committee and included in House File 2151 as an amendment.
Well, I was just going to ask you how you can move that. That sounds good.
Actually, it'll be incorporated into House File 2151.
I do have an amendment. I don't believe it's a delete all.
Let's move that and get it in the shape you want it.
Okay, I'd like to add to this bill, House File 2517, the 2517A1 amendment, which I believe refers to cable communication systems, which takes this little old innocuous bill from amount of a technical cleanup bill. This is something that I'm assured is a technical cleanup bill for the cable companies also.
So Representative Beard?
Yes.
Moves the A1 amendment to House File 2517?
Correct.
Is that the short 20-pager?
Yeah, it's a short 20-pager. Everyone digested it.
Why don't we ask for discussion, but maybe somebody could explain that amendment to us first. Can you represent a beard or represent?
Actually, no, I can't, but I have a note slipped to me here that Mr. Jeff Leaders from the City of Lakeville would like to come and speak to it.
Okay, why don't he come forward? Mr. Leaders?
Yes, thank you.
Please identify yourself for the record. Can you explain what this amendment is?
Yes, I can, Chair Westerman, the commissioners. This is a language cleanup bill. It represents a number of meetings over the course of 2003 with the Minnesota Cable Communications Association. And I am the president of the Minnesota Association of Community Telecommunications Administrators. Okay, my name again is Jeff Leaders, and the cable coordinator for the City of Lakeville. As you can see throughout the document, it's basically modernizes the language in Chapter 238, which is part of the state law that covers cable TV and the franchising abilities of the cities, municipalities, and franchise authorities throughout the state of Minnesota. At this point, I can open it up for any questions. Like I said, it's just strictly a language cleanup bill.
So, Mr. Leaders, when you say modernize, what do you mean? Can you give us kind of the quick examples of what you're changing?
Okay. Well, in one part of the document, and see if I can get to it quickly here, but it references a number of divisions that municipalities in the past referred to as an A series, a B series, and a C series type of system, and page 31 through 33, and then those are expanded upon throughout the document, and those are no longer referenced in the franchise agreements that we use today. So it basically takes out that obsolete language and modernizes it.
Any discussion? Any opposition or anybody in the audience? Seeing none, no further questions. All those, Beard renews his motion to approve the A1 amendment to House File 2517. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion passes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Do you have another amendment, Representative Beard?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not seeing any other amendments.
Okay. Go ahead and tell us what your bill does, and we'll...
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to call someone here to help me with it, Joanne or Gary. I'm going to call Mr. Knickerbocker here to help explain the essence of the bill, but let me just make a few comments while he's coming. I was approached about carrying this bill. Apparently, there's a group of folks who are constantly working on the telecommunications regulations. Every once in a while, they come up with a list of regulations that no longer apply, either for technological reasons or because rules have changed elsewhere or business practices have changed. So the heart and soul of House File 2517 initially was to just do a lot of that cleanup. I do have here some interesting terms and rules that were that used to be in code that we're proposing to take out, things like farmer line, party line, so on and so forth, things I don't even know if they exist in the state anymore, but I remember from my grandpa's farm years ago. If it rang two longs and a short, don't answer it, because that's the neighbors down the street. Of course, we like to listen in from time to time anyhow. However, with that, I'll ask Mr. Knickerbocker if he would explain in a little more detail, a little more professionally, what the bill's about.
Mr. Knickerbocker.
And Mr. Chairman, members, for the record, my name is Jerry Knickerbocker. I'm here this afternoon on behalf of the Minnesota Telecom Alliance. We did bring this bill to Representative Beard. It's the result of some meetings that members of the industry held. We looked at really all of the rules relating to telecommunications, a subcommittee of the MTA did over this past summer and fall. And we basically broke rules into different categories, ones that were obviously obsolete, to those that needed some further modernization or updating, and those that need to be changed just because of the changes in technology in terms of other competitors and providers of similar services. And the rules don't reflect what's going on in the marketplace in 2004. And we did meet with the Attorney General's Office and the Department of Commerce and the PUC over these rules that you see in front of you here. We decided to only, at this real short session, we'll just deal with the rules that everybody agrees are obsolete, that have no more utility, and set aside for this summer and fall further discussion with the regulators about how to make, you know, some of the changes in terminology, the updating of the remaining sets of rules. So that's for this summer and fall. There'll be a bill for next legislative session. We'll assume that'll kind of carry on with what you see here. But the rules that are being repealed, as described in your bill summary, are all obsolete, and we know no opposition to these proposed repeal, and we know of no utility in terms of keeping these rules on the books. And I think with Representative Beard's comments, Mr. Chairman, and that little explanation, I'll close.
Thank you, Mr. Knickerbocker. Any questions? Any other opposition in the audience? Seeing none, seeing no further discussion, we'll lay this bill over for inclusion and to be incorporated into House File 2151. All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion approves. Is approved. Bill is laid over and will be incorporated into House File 2151. Representative Beard, you got another one.
I do, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I have House File 2518.
Representative Beard moves House File 2518.
Correct.
Be recommended to be approved and incorporate and laid over and incorporated into House File 2151.
Chairman.
Mr. Representative Beard.
I noticed that I also have a delete all amendment for this one. So my one-and-a-half-page bill is now a three-and-a-half-page bill. And so I'd like to move the delete all amendment 2518-DE1.
Representative Beard moves the DE1 amendment to House File 2518. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The DE1 motion is approved. Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Tell us what's in your bill and what you just do.
The bill it deals with the interest rates that utility companies are required to pay on equipment deposits. When I first agreed to carry this bill, it related only to telephone companies for deposits equipment customers may make in entering into a contract for various pieces of equipment, which would escape me at the moment, what they may be. When that money is held by the companies, they're required to put it at interest. That interest rate is set at 6%, I believe. Whenever I heard that was the going rate for deposit, I offered one of my CDs to the telco guys in my office because I could make a deposit somewhere at 6%. That would be pretty handsome. And they said, well, you're underscoring the problem we're facing right now. There's nowhere they can put that money at interest and make anywhere near that. Once the bill was filed, our friends from several other utility companies also approached us that are also under the same sorts of rules, some at different rates of interest, of course. But basically any company that requires a deposit in excess of $50, in some cases $20, has to put the money on account at interest. And so we bundled gas, telephone, cable TV, electric, light, heat, power, and water companies all together with the telephone companies. So all the regulated utilities are in the same bill now under the same requirements if this bill passes, that a rate will be set by a formula which is in the bill to be set, I believe, by the Department of Commerce every year on December 15th, a rate that's much more reflective of current market conditions. So at the moment, it immediately would go down. It could foreseeably go up in the future if interest rates rise. And that's the essence of the bill, Mr. Chairman. I would ask Mr. Knickerbocker if he'd like to speak further to it. If you need him to.
Actually, I don't know if we need him to, but I got a question. How do the companies, businesses, find out what the rate is? And is there a floor? Is there a ceiling?
I'll ask Mr. Knickerbocker to explain that.
You mean under the...
You can identify yourself for their tape again.
Chairman, for the record, my name is Jerry Knickerbocker, representing the Minnesota Telecom Alliance. Are you talking about, Mr. Chairman, on a going forward basis, how people would know what the new rates are?
Yeah, yeah. If it changes every year,
right.
What's going to be done to notify people, or how do they find out?
Mr. Chairman, the procedure in the bill calls for the Department of Commerce to set the rate and be a notification to the utilities to the Commissioner of Department of Commerce.
Okay. Mr. To elaborate a little further, Mr. Chairman, specifically, it directs the Commerce Department to set the annual rate of interest according to the weekly average yield of one-year United States Treasury securities adjusted for constant maturity for the last full week in November. So that's when the snapshot will be taken, the last week of November. That rate will be announced on December 15th to all the regulated industries, utilities, and they'll begin paying that, I believe, on January 1st of the following year. Is that clear?
That's clear. So the businesses basically will have to have their own way of finding out.
Everybody would be responsible, and I would suppose they'd want to know that.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. I just need some help in understanding this. The deposit that is made can go along for how long?
Mr. Representative Beard.
the deposit that a customer would make to any given utility, I suppose it would be up to the contract that is in place. I really can't speak any more to it than that, Mr. Chair, if I could look to the audience for someone that can answer that, or staff, perhaps.
Well,
Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Knickerbocker, I would assume it's as long as a customer is a customer with the company, isn't it? But
no,
go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, members, I can't speak for the other utilities, but for telephone companies, there is a rule that says you can only escrow or ask for a deposit for two months of service, and then you can't hold a customer's deposit for more than 12 months. So if they've got, you ask for a deposit for some reason, at the end of the 12 months, it has to be either given to the customer or credited against the account.
Okay. You have more, Mr. Elock? House Research?
I just want to state that what Mr. Knickerbocker said is in current statute that what reads, this is Section 325 EO2, the company may, at its option, pay the interest at intervals it chooses, but at least annually, by direct payment or as a credit on bills.
Okay. Thank you. Any further discussion?
Yes.
Representative Reginius.
Okay. Now I thought I had Mr. Knickerbocker straightened it up that nothing would be held for more than a year, but then council tells us at least annually. I'm not understanding again.
Mr. Rila.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Wiginius, the deposit is held for more than a year. What the statute currently speaks to is how often interest is paid, and that's paid at least annually.
Okay.
Follow up, Representative Wiginius.
Okay. If the I'm just looking at the fairness to the person who has made the deposit, and if it is going to, if it's going to be held more than a year, it seems to me that the formula should be based on the length of, I mean, if it's going to be held 5 years, then 5 years pays more than 1 year. So the customer then is, we don't want the customer to be subsidizing the company here. I mean, I can see why you want to change, but I want us to be careful we don't go too far in the other direction.
Representative Beard.
As I understand, Mr. Chairman and Representative Wiginius, as I understand the intent of this interest rate setting by the Department of Commerce, it wouldn't be a one-time event for a particular deposit, but every year it would be updated. So, for instance, I had $50 on account with the gas company for my meter. 1 year I might make 1 3/4, and then next year if the interest rates went up, they'd pay me more during that year. But the rates would be set once a year for the following year, but as long as I had money on deposit, I'm assuming that the interest rate would be fluctuating.
Representative Wiginius, follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. But if I am putting in a deposit and I expect it to be there for 5 years or 10 years or whatever, see, and this is where we're getting the inconsistency. If it's going to be there more than a year, then why aren't we using 2 years or 4 years as the readjustment?
Representative Wiginius, my guess is, if you adjusted it every 4 years,
no.
you wouldn't have. I mean, interest rates fluctuate more often than that, and
right, I understand.
So I think Representative Beard can answer it, but an annual adjustment is fairly often to keep up with the market, but not so often that it's done every week. But Representative Beard?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. I guess I don't understand the question then when Representative Wiginius phrases it that way. If as long as money's on account, which if that's the question, how long does it have to be on account? I can't speak to that. I do not know. But as long as it's on account, the company will be required to pay interest on that money at a rate to be set once a year. That rate will change presumably every year. But beyond that, I guess I don't understand the question.
Representative Cox, you got insight on this issue?
Well, I don't know if I have any insight, but I think Representative Beard, what I heard Representative Wiginius ask is, if somebody's going to ask me for a $100 deposit for telephone equipment or whatever it is, and I'm told that it needs to be on deposit for 5 years. I think what you're saying is that when you go into that agreement, knowing that you may need to leave this deposit there for 5 years, that maybe it should be an interest rate should be pegged on a 5-year financial investment rather than 5 1-year financial investment.
Thank you, Representative.
Now, you explain, Mr. Chairman,
Representative Davids.
Yeah. Okay, we'll go back to that.
All right. Who's next? Representative Beard?
Well, now I understand the question, Mr. Chairman, and I guess I have no real answer for it, except that the people that drafted the legislation said we'll set the rate every year based on the 1-year note. Actually, if there's a financial person in the audience, I'm just thinking that the 1-year notes, do they necessarily carry a higher rate or a lower rate than 5-year notes? I'm not sure, so I can't speak to that.
Mr. Chairman, I want to clarify something if I can on this particular point. I'm in no position to speak to what the other utilities do or the statute or the process of the procedure. The telephone companies are governed under a rule, 7810-1600, which were not among those we repealed earlier, having to do with deposits. And that rule establishes that there's only a 2 months bill when applicable can be asked for. And I'll read you the language, Representative Wagenius. The deposit shall be refunded to the customer after 12 consecutive months of prompt payment of all bills to that utility. So telephone companies don't hold it longer than 12 months.
So Mr. Knickerbocker, if the deposit is up front, they've got a 12-month good history, you can't hold it for 5 years.
That's correct. It's given back to the customer, credited to the bill. I can't speak to the other utilities. I
present Virginia
to the rule that covers telephone companies. But I think we're losing sight of the fact that this bill really just attempts to kind of find a way to kind of change the interest rates. Once a year, it sets up a mechanism so that it's keeping with what's going on in the real world. Our present situation as it relates to telephones, we're dealing with a rule that was set back in 1997 at 6%, and it's never been adjusted. There's no mechanism for adjusting it. So we were looking for an automatic way to kind of take care of that once a year, and that's what this formula attempts to do, Mr. Chairman and members.
Representative Guinness.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, Representative Knickerbocker, I think the bill works for you and for customers if it's in telecommunications, but then we're talking about other utilities, apparently. Mm-hmm. And so then there seems to me two alternatives. One is that we hold other utilities to the same standard and the deposit comes back after a year, which seems reasonable to me. I'm not understanding why people should keep a deposit for longer than that. But if that's not going to be the case, then I think I would go with Representative Cox's articulation of my argument, because he did get it.
Any other discussion?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Beard.
Yeah, while Representative Mr. Knickerbocker, sorry, we're used to him being around here as a representative, I guess. It's Mr. Knickerbocker at this point in time. But while he was making his case, I was trying to make eye contact with other utility people in the audience who were studiously avoiding me. However, one of our friends from the gas company did come forward with, I think they were desperately looking for the rules that pertain to their companies. In this case, the natural gas utility plays by the same rules. They can only hold the deposit for 12 months. If customers are making regular payments, then it must be refunded. So apparently it doesn't go forward unless there's some payment trouble history or something like that. I'm not
any other discussion.
The assumption for the power companies, water companies, or everybody else that's avoiding me out there. So.
Any other discussion? Representative Genius.
Well, since we are in this rule going to be governing other folks, I can see now that the rule works for telephones and gas. But what about other folks who may hold a deposit because apparently they have the statutory ability to hold a deposit, and we just don't know. Do they hold it or don't? I mean, it's just a factual question that seems to be.
Well, let's ask. Who's here from the electricity industry.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Representative Beard,
had a note handed to me, too, from our friends at the electric company. They found a note also that it applies to them. I'm wondering, is this Commerce that promulgates and enforces these rules?
Maybe. Is there somebody from Commerce that can
I'd love to drag
shed light for this?
Mr. Bull back up here for a session.
Well, if he can shed light on this.
Yeah, if he can shed light, that's right. Heck, we'd have him up anyhow. But.
Make a seat for Mr. Bull right up here.
He's delegated, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair, committee members, Diane Wells from the Department of Commerce.
I assume you understand the question.
I believe the question was, does the department enforce the rules? That would be correct. They're commission rules, and the department would enforce those.
But then do you also know, does the electricity companies and water companies, do they have the same 12-month statute upon prompt, 12 months of prompt payment? Do they have to return the deposit, or can they keep it for 5 years if that's how long the customer is with them?
Mr. Chair, committee members, it appears that 7820.4500 requires that a, the deposit shall be refunded to the customer after 12 consecutive months of prompt payment of all utility bills, and that would be gas, electric, and telecommunications. The commission does not regulate water or cable.
Representative Guinness, does
thank
that answer your question? Okay, thank you, Mrs. Wells. Any other discussion? Seeing none, let's see, do we hold on? Okay. With that, let's vote on the laying over House File 2518 as amended to be incorporated into House File 2151. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion passes. Thank you, Representative Beard. Representative Gunter. Hope you don't have such a controversial one. Representative Gunther moves House File 892 to be approved and laid on the table and incorporated into House File 2151. How's that for starters, Representative Gunther? Or do you want it on its own?
I think it just doesn't have it going on its own to the floor, Mr. Chairman.
You sure?
The members of this committee will make that determination, but that's my desire.
All right. We'll move.
It doesn't matter one way or the other. But
move for approval and recommend it to put it on the general register.
Very well.
Then, Representative Gunther, you need to move the DE2 amendment.
DE2 amendment, yes, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Gunther moves the DE2 amendment. Get it in the shape the author wishes. All those in favor, any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion approved. Representative Gunther, go ahead to explain the amendment in your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The amendment now is the bill. And this bill passed out of regulated industry committee last session, but the Senate ran out of time before deadline. And we have made some noted changes in this bill this year. And as bill summary goes, section one of the bill consists of 5,000 customers as defined by independent telephone company. Presently, it is 50,000 customers for an A4 provision and 30,000 access lines for other provisions. Section two makes it easier for small telcos to create an expanded calling area for their customers. With that, Section 3 directs the PUC to give consistent treatment of all provides that are seeking eligible telecom carriers status for the Federal Universal Service Fund by requiring the PUC to be consistent with the FCC's criteria. And with that, Mr. Young would be glad to elaborate on this bill.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. members of the committee, I have nothing to add. If there are any questions, we can certainly answer those.
Okay. Identify yourself just for the tape.
I'm sorry. My name is Randy Young. I'm the president of the Minnesota Association for Rural Telecommunications.
Any discussion? Any, you have any other testifiers, Representative Gunther?
Mr. Chairman, no, I don't.
Any other, persons in the audience that want to testify in opposition to this bill? Seeing none, the Representative Gunther renews his motion to approve House File 892 as amended and referred to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion passes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Representative Beard, House File 979. Beard moves House File 979 to be approved, and you want this incorporated in House File 2151 or moved to the floor? Or both?
Question. give me just a moment here. I was focused on a couple other bills and trying to put my notes back together. This one's going to require some discussion. There were some issues that staff is going to require some policy making by this body. So to be fair, I know we want to take a few moments to talk some things through here, but just a second. Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we'd like to let this bill stand alone and move it to the floor, I believe. Please, if we may. So I'd like to make that motion that we refer this to the General Register if it makes it through here.
Representative Beard moves approval of House Files 979 be approved and recommended to the General Register.
Now, Mr. Chair, I do have a DE-1 amendment. Is that what somebody's about to move? Or
just one second. Representative Hoppe?
No, you can go ahead. I've got one other short amendment that you might or might not find to be a friendly amendment.
Okay.
Oh, well, good.
I would like to move the DE-1 amendment to get it in the shape we'd like for discussion purposes, Mr. Chair, before we start.
Representative Beard moves the DE-1 amendment. Any discussion? This is to put it in the shape you want it, Representative Beard?
Correct.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion passes.
Thank you, committee. With that, Mr. Chairman, this bill it started out as a related to the bill we did extending A4 privileges to smaller telephone companies. Apparently, the alternative forms of regulation have proven to be popular and successful in allowing smaller telephone companies to compete with things like cell phones and the other emerging technologies, allowing them to be a little faster on their feet and not have to open enormous rulemaking processes with the commission or with the department in moving their companies and their business ahead. It seemed like if it was good for them, it would be good for the medium-sized telephone companies, and so that's what we did. We asked for companies with lines, I think number 50,000 lines or less, which is most of the medium-sized companies. And then the DE-1 amendment we just offered extended that to all the regulated telephone companies in the state of Minnesota, that the A4 process be extended to them also, because basically, folks, it's good for ratepayers. That's a word you've heard me talk about a lot in the last couple of years. Good for ratepayers. It's good for the telephone businesses and keeps them competitive in a rapidly changing environment. With that, I'd like to introduce Mr. Jerry Knickerbocker to introduce a couple expert witnesses to speak to the nuances of the bill, and then I believe we have a few others that would like to talk to it also.
Mr. Knickerbocker.
Chairman, members, for the record, my name is Jerry Knickerbocker on behalf of the Minnesota Telecom Alliance. House File 979 was introduced last legislative session and contained a number of changes in the current A4 statute. And for those of you who are not familiar with A4, what that means is an alternative form of regulation. Theoretically, it's a relaxed form of regulation. Member companies, you know, one time were all rate of return companies and regulated what you can earn under what set of circumstances, so forth and so on. In 1995, A4 was passed, which allowed companies to elect to go into an alternative form of regulation. It's sort of like a contract with the regulators that you'll do certain things, you'll meet certain service quality standards, you'll do certain levels of infrastructure development and deployment. And that's been on the books since 1995. And the small companies that are under 50,000 lines have the ability to have their plans automatically renewed. This bill would also give the intermediate-sized companies the ability to have their A4 plans renewed, but with some oversight in the sense that citizens could petition if there was indeed a A4 plan being proposed to be renewed. The companies have to notify their ratepayers that this is under consideration, and there's a petition process by which they could object to any kind of a A4 extension with the commission. The commission has the right to intervene if and object to any kind of a extension of an A4 plan if that member company has not met its service quality standards, which they've agreed to previously, because under the previous plan they had to have some sort of benchmarks that they were going to be measured against, as well as their infrastructure deployment. If that hasn't happened, then obviously, you know, the plan shouldn't be renewed. So this kind of streamlines the process a little bit, and I think everybody has to keep in mind that, you know, you had rate of return, and now we've had relaxed regulation under the A4 since 1995, and it hasn't been updated. That's one of the things we're trying to do here in this bill. But A4 is really a step on the road to deregulation. So this is not the end of the kind of regulation that telephone companies should deal with. And as Representative Beard mentioned in his earlier comments, when this bill was passed in 1995, which set up the procedures under which A4 could be adopted and or renewed, the Federal Telecom Act hadn't been passed. Wireless was not a consideration. You didn't have voiceover. You didn't have Wi-Fi. You didn't have all of the competing service types of providers that you have for voice service today. So the statute, in that sense, needs to be updated in terms of giving member companies tools to compete in the environment they find themselves in today. So this is what that bill does. It allows medium-sized companies to have the option of extending their A4 plans under certain sets of conditions, subject to consumer complaint, subject to the Department of Commerce and the PUC oversight and their objection as to whether or not they didn't meet the terms of the previously agreed-upon A4 plan. The bill also makes a couple of other small changes in the small companies section of the A4 statute to deal with whenever a small company makes a proposed rate increase. There's a petition that can be submitted by ratepayers, and then the commission or company would have to have an investigation by the department. And there's no time frame on that. So in this language, in that section of the amendment, we put 30 days time frame on for the department to act on a petition and submit their report or findings to the commission, so it could be acted on in a timely manner. those are really the two general overseeing issues that we're trying to deal with in this particular bill that kind of tries to modernize the A4 statute. And at this point, Mr. Chairman, members, I'd like to turn the microphone over to Vic Dobris from Sprint, who would like to make a couple of comments about their A4 experience and or you know, why this change would be helpful on a going forward basis.
Go ahead, Mr. Dobris.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Victor Dobris. I represent Sprint. Sprint is currently in its second alternative regulation plan. We started our first plan in 1996, ran it for 6 years until 2002. At that point, you know, we filed a plan that had some modifications to it. We're in the second year of that plan. This bill would allow us, if we live up to the conditions of our current plan, to continue with local service rates capped at the levels that are contained in the plan, so long as we have met our service quality standards as defined in the plan and met the infrastructure commitments. In other words, if it's running smoothly and the customers are happy, we'd have the opportunity to get an automatic extension. We think the plan has been good for our customers and it's been good for the company. It's helped us to be more flexible in a competitive environment. With that, I'll stand for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Dobris. Any questions for Mr. Dobris?
Mr. Chairman, I do have one clarifying comment. It was pointed out to me that my DE amendment raised the number of qualifying lines up to but not exceeding 1 million lines. That does not include our friends at Quest, who's pretty much everybody else but I think I inferred pretty clearly that it included all telephone companies. It does not. I'm sorry, I misspoke. Thank you.
Representative Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Beard, or Representative Beard. Can you explain why that is the case?
Representative Beard?
Why we did not include Quest?
Why you did not include
Larson.
Beard? Do you want the nice version or the real world version?
Well, that's they're always the real answer and the good answer, Representative Beard. I'll take either one.
Okay, I'll give you the nice version because I was not asked by Quest to carry the bill. I was asked by the mid-sized telephone companies to carry the bill, Representative Larson.
Thank you, Representative
Beard. Mr. Chairman?
Thanks.
Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I think we might as well take care of that problem right now. And I'd like to amend on page 2, line 20, after the word company, delete with fewer than, and on line 21, 1 million access lines. Delete 1 million access lines. I'd move that amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, we have the amendment before us. Any discussion to that amendment? Anybody like to testify for or against it?
Mr. Chair, as the author, I'd just say thank you. It's fine with me.
Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that is also a good idea. I mean, a little less regulation is good for everybody. And frankly, if it makes Representative Larson happy, I think it's a good thing.
I wish I could get that kind of agreement, Mr. Chair, all the time. Representative Hoppe.
Is there anyone that would like to comment on the amendment?
Mr. Chair, in the absence of any immediate questions, I do have another testifier. If I may introduce Ms. Joanne Johnson, I'd be happy to do that.
Is this to
on
the amendment?
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Is this
again?
To the amendment?
No, I'm out of order. No, it's not to the amendment. I'll hold that introduction until we're disposed of this.
Okay. With that, Representative Hackbarth introduces a motion for his amendment that deletes on page 2, line 20. Could you tell us what it does?
On line 20, it deletes with fewer than, and on line 21, 1 million access lines.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Motion prevails. Okay, Representative Beard.
Now I would like to introduce to the committee Joanne Johnson from the Frontier Telephone Group, I believe.
Welcome, committee. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Joanne Johnson. I work for Frontier, a Citizens Communications company. Frontier portion of our company is 45 exchanges in the state of Minnesota with 125,000 access lines. Frontier needs to renegotiate its A4 this year, and we were the prime drivers of this bill. what we would like to do is just expand a little bit on the purpose of the A4 as we see it and our most recent experience. The last time Frontier negotiated an A4 plan, it took a little over $250,000 for our company to do that, and it took over 18 months to accomplish it. That pales in comparison to what Quest puts out, their $1 million up front just to get started. So it is burdensome for the company. We recovered that money from our ratepayers, which is an unnecessary expense to them, we feel. And I'd also like to just elaborate on two or three points I would like you to keep in mind. One is that an alternative form of regulation is not deregulation. Its purpose in the first place is to allow phone companies and the regulators to come to agreement that the company will take some risk, that we will make commitments to our customers, that we will adhere to a set and measurable outline of our service quality, and also capital investment that we commit to in the state of Minnesota. We're not asking to be relieved of that burden, nor are we asking for lightened regulation, nor are we asking for deregulation. We are simply asking for the ability, if we are in compliance with everything in our previously negotiated agreement, that we be allowed to extend that agreement for a period of 1 to 3 years. You may hear comments that we have no provision in here for anyone to take any look at our rates. Our rates for our customers under this bill will be frozen for the length of the extension. We'll make no rate adjustments up nor down. Even during the course of an A4 term, during its normal term, no rates can be adjusted without permission of the commission itself. So all of those customer rights and all of those customer service quality issues are still intact and will remain intact, and the customers aren't giving up anything. You will hear probably the term over-earning. I would like to caution you that over-earning does not mean that we drive Porsches. Over-earning actually means that we are allowed to collect revenue over the limit that is imposed upon us with rate of return. That's what an A4 is all about. So small companies can do this without asking. We're not even asking for that like we did last year. We're just asking to be allowed to ask that we can extend an A4 that's already been agreed to. Thank you.
Any questions for Ms. Johnson? Okay, with that, the Representative Beard renews his motion that House File 979 is amended to be recommended to pass the Senate. Where, or is this one going to be included in the...
Go to the floor.
To the floor. Any further discussion? Yes. Oh, there's opposition. To a beard bill? I'm sorry, caught me off guard.
Ignore that man behind the curtain, Mr.
Okay. Is there anyone else other than Mr. Bull who would like to testify against this bill?
Possibly.
Okay.
Depending on how good a job I do.
Mr. Bull, to the House File 979 as amended, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Mr. Chair, I'm Mike Bull from the Department of Commerce. And we don't, just to be clear, we support the ability to extend A4s, and we think that that even should be the default, because it does solve a lot of regulatory burden both on our side and on their side, and it is good for consumers. The one thing that we have objection with in this bill is the limited opportunity to object. One thing that I'm not sure has been made clear is that it's not their election is for a three-year period to extend their A4, but they can do that multiple times. So there isn't any, this could be done, you know, for 3 year periods. So 12 years later, we haven't had a chance to look at their rates. You know, 15 years later, we haven't had a chance to look at things. So consumer protection issues that we'd like to deal with the company, we would be precluded from looking at that. So what I've been trying to do is to work with the companies to develop to language that allows us to object to a specified number of things, consumer protection, service quality, infrastructure investments, or specific rates charged by the company. And in the case of our raising an objection, that the rest of the A4 could roll over and they could continue to operate under the terms of that A4, but the commission would then deal with the specific nature of our objection. But thus far, we haven't been able to get much movement from the companies toward doing that. And I think that's something that we think is very important, that we not allow this to go forward with the limited nature of our opportunity to raise a problem with the current A4. But, oh, by the way, Mr. Chair, we do support extending this to Quest. We started this by supporting Quest's extension of Quest to A4 at the commission, and the commission construed the statute to say that the statutes don't currently allow A4 extensions, so that's why the language is here before you.
Thank you, Mr. Bull. Any questions? You don't have an amendment that anyone's offering, Mr. Bull, either?
Mr. Chair, I had one of these 2 o'clock in the morning kinds of things where I sent out a proposal to the folks, and we're continuing to work on that. So I don't know if it's something you think is worthy to give us time before you pass it out to work on the language, and I have spoken with Mr. Beard about our concerns.
Representative Beard.
Yeah, I guess my question to Mr. Bull's concerns, and I'm not sure that I agree or understand, the service quality, infrastructure development, and rates still can be open and touched on. I know the department...
That's in your current language, right?
In the current language, yeah, the commission, I think, is the one that expressed concern that they would like the ability to open a lot more than that. I'm at a loss as to what else the ratepayers would be concerned about, and to know what we'd want to be in besides the quality infrastructure and rates here. Rates to the customer, not the rate of return of the good business practice, for instance.
That's good. Mr. Chair?
Mr. Bull.
One response to that is when a company enters into an A4 for a 3-year period, one piece of that is to say they'll make these infrastructure investments in year 1, these infrastructure investments in year 2, and these infrastructure investments in year 3 for a 3-year A4. Under the current language, once the company has finalized its obligations in that year 3 obligation, we wouldn't ever have another chance to look to say what else should they be doing, what should they be doing in a rural part of their exchange. Under the current bill, they would only be able to look at whether they did that in the first, what they said they were going to do in the first 3 years, but in year 15 we still wouldn't have any chance to look at things. So, and then the consumer protection issues would never be able to be raised under the language that's here in the bill, which I think is a significant problem.
Any other discussion? Let's just ask any other testifiers. So, Mr. Marker from the AG's office. Thank you, Mr. Bull.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members
Mr. Marker.
Of the committee. Pete Marker from the Attorney General's office. I would simply echo Mr. Bull's comments with regard to the ability of the state agencies to raise an objection. We don't have anything against A4s. Our experience is that they work quite well, but we do want the ability to raise issues to the extent that they come up. And certainly the department has been more involved in this bill than we have, but we recognize that need as well. So I would simply echo the comments.
So, Mr. Marker, what about a 10-year sunset so everybody's got to review this within a reasonable period of time? Is that something that would be more friendly to you?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, a 10-year sunset on...
On this statute?
On this statute. That would seem like a long time to us. Certainly, if the ability of the agencies to raise objections remained as they remain in here, then 10 years would be an awful long time. This is such a changing industry that we would have concern about that.
What do you propose then? 5 years?
Mr. Chair, I don't have a proposal.
Okay.
Thank you.
Representative Beard.
Yes?
What do you think about a sunset to review this or other comments or else we're going to vote? So
the I think some good questions were raised here, and I'd like to ask Mr. Knickerbocker to back the table, maybe share some thoughts on things. The a couple thoughts just as we were having our little sidebar in the back while the AG's office was speaking are that a lot of what's being driven in telecom right now are by companies that are not regulated at all and have pretty much free reign in the marketplace. That doesn't seem to be driving costs up or diminishing service. What we're up against here are companies that can expand service and offer all kinds of incredible options we can't even think of today. Well, I suppose you could even imagine them today, but still, you get the point. We're working with a regulatory environment here that's kind of hamstringing folks from being a little more responsive in rate setting, offering packages and whatnot, promotional packages and so on and so forth, like our cell phone people do. The business about investing in infrastructure, just in checking with the bill sponsors here, yes, indeed, the Mr. Bull's concerns are valid, that if a company's been required to make investments and then made them when they do their A4 extension, folks, this does preclude the commission from saying, make more investments. However, I would submit that the marketplace is driving that much more aggressively and much more with a much finer point than the commission could do on a 3 or 4 year period. So those are questions you may want to ponder as we vote for this bill and decide how to dispose of it or move it ahead. Or for more doctoring or what have you, that may be an odd statement coming from the author of the bill. But I think you'll know me as a free market guy, and I think the competition from the unregulated sources is holding these people to a much higher standard than we can in the regulatory environment, rather than penalizing them with $250,000 application fees to be told what to do when they know darn well what they need to do just to stay competitive is a little bit unnecessary. With that, I could stand for a few more questions or ask Representative Powell if he wants to comment further.
Representative Powell?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Beard, we've had both the Commerce Department and the Attorney General's Office give both say that, from what I heard, that they were in general agreement with this bill, but they had significant problems with a certain aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it would seem to me that that gives me pause. And I would think that if we need to give you a little time to bring the two sides together so we have a happy resolution to this, it would be better off doing it now before it gets out of the committee and rather than doing it on the House floor.
Representative Beard.
Representative Powell, I was born and raised near Happy Valley, Pennsylvania. I like Happy in the Valley, and I would be amenable to that.
Mr. Marker, Mr. Bowl, can you come up here? How... Are your objections so far off you can't fix them between now and tomorrow or not? Or else we may vote on it, and I'm not sure how well you'd do with the vote.
Mr. Chair, with that in mind, I think we've made some pretty reasonable offers, and I think we definitely want to continue to talk to folks. I think one of the problems today is that we haven't had, given all the flurry of stuff that's been going on today, haven't had the chance to sit down with the folks and work through the specifics of our proposals to them. So I think that there's opportunity to continue to work.
Could you work ASAP and we'll bring it up early tomorrow?
Mr. Chair, I think that would work.
Representative Beard, would that be amenable to you?
I only have three more bills today, Mr. Chair. I think I'll be done by about 8 o'clock anytime after that.
I think Representative Powell maybe raises a good point. Let's just look. But I think the general mood is, Representative Beard, I think there's interest in your bill. If there's some obvious or some oversights that maybe would be could be ironed out, perhaps that'd be good. And even look at just a 5-year sunset, and that way everybody can be assured we'll look at this down the road and see how well it's working.
But wise and merciful care, Mr. Chairman.
With that, the chair will lay over House File. What is this?
2979.
979 as amended. Next.
Greg? You can give it to Junkie.
Pass it down.
Representative Westrom, welcome to your committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, first I'd like to move House File 2542 be recommended to pass and referred to the floor.
House File 2542 is before us. Please proceed.
Mr. Chair, I'll call up Mr. Knickerbocker here as well, but he can come while he's coming. I'll just give a brief background of this bill. Groups have been working on this issue for a while to deal with how do we encourage more competition in the cable industry under the current laws and the federal 1996 Act that intended to encourage and bring forth more competition in the cable industry. This bill is based off of a court case that was decided in the last year, commonly referred to as the Otsego case. And essentially it says the local municipality can, within some confine, design or work out an agreement with a competitive cable operator to come in and compete with the current offerings in their community. They can't offer them a better deal financially than what's currently being paid, but they don't have to require them to serve the entire community right away as far as the territory goes. Right now, several rural providers are oftentimes unable to come in and compete if they have to immediately provide and overbuild for the whole community, and this would allow them to negotiate with the municipality to come in and develop a plan to provide to the community and work that arrangement out with the local municipality or community. And so with that, I will turn it over to Mr. Knickerbocker and let him discuss and explain it a little bit more.
Thank you, Representative Westrom. Mr. Knickerbocker, if you'd introduce yourself, and I've got 8 people on a list, so be as brief as you can.
Mr. Chair, just to notify the audience, we actually moved a little faster than I thought we might. I don't intend to vote on this bill today. We'll revisit it tomorrow. So just to let everybody know. But let's try to move as far as we can.
Mr. Knickerbocker.
Mr. Chairman, members, for the record, my name is Jerry Knickerbocker. I'm on behalf of the Minnesota Telecom Alliance. This bill before you is the outgrowth of a different bill that was introduced last legislative session, which would have addressed the issues as described by Representative Westra. This bill that you have before you today is the result of some work over the summer and fall with the telephone industry, the League of Minnesota Cities, and the cable administrators. And what we attempted to do is to find a way that would allow competition in the cable industry to occur. Now, this doesn't mandate anything. This doesn't guarantee anything. This just changes the current cable law, Chapter 238, which is outdated, written for another time and place and another set of circumstances, that would allow municipalities to have the ability to grant a franchise under terms and conditions different than what the incumbent cable provider has. And then the second part of the bill just sets out the way in which the new competing cable provider and the incumbent cable provider and the municipality would take care of coming up with an agreement on PEG channels and the providing of PEG services. And as many of you have seen the handout sheet on this particular bill, this doesn't affect existing franchise agreements. The same 5% would be paid to the city as is being paid by the incumbent. The PEG requirements are exactly the same. So all this does is just give the municipality the ability to create some competition. And that's important. Obviously, that follows with the intent of the Federal Act of 96 and the FCC orders that have come out since that time. And our law, the way it stands at the present time, constitutes a barrier to entry by making it very difficult to get into the cable business. And the people that will follow me this afternoon will talk a little bit about some of those issues and some of their experiences as it relates to dealing with their attempts to try to provide cable competition in municipalities.
All right. Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Knickerbocker?
Mr. Chairman, at this time I'd like to ask Gene South
very good.
In the comment.
Welcome. If you'd introduce yourself, identify your company for the tape.
Good afternoon, committee members, and to you, Chair Wistrom. For the record, my name is Gene South. I am the CEO, General Manager of Lakedale Communications, which is headquartered in Annandale, Minnesota. Our group of companies is in direct competition of Charter for video programming service in Wilmer and other communities in the state of Minnesota. We also provide telecommunication services in the Quest and Sprint serving areas. The existing law requires any competitor in Minnesota world of video to mirror that of the service area of the existing cable TV provider. House File 2542 is the first step of many steps needed to encourage competition within the cable industry. This bill is a compromise as negotiated with the Minnesota Association of Cable Telecommunications Administrator and the Minnesota League of Cities. It removes one of many barriers for entry to provide video programming, therefore allowing more than one choice for the consumers. Telecommunications companies in Minnesota have become active within the communities to provide video programming services by utilizing their telecommunications infrastructure. We're providing voice, data, video platforms over the very small wires that enter your home, which in the past could only provide telephone service. This broadband infrastructure brings enhanced services to the consumer as high-speed data and digital video programming along with other services. Our companies prefer to serve selected areas due to the limited amount of investment we can finance and support. Facilities that we invest in that do not have a large customer base, while the business plan makes assumptions that a growing number of customers would provide a reasonable return on the investment over time. In the city of Otsego, which is in the northwest suburban area of the Twin Cities, one of our companies would not sign the proposed franchise agreement due to the current state law regarding the service area. Otsego is a very large community, about 9 miles wide, many parts undeveloped. The bill allows the service area matter to be negotiated between the franchise authority and the competitive local program service provider. Second, the bill also addresses the public education and government channel requirements known as PEG. We are required to participate and fund PEG. Therefore, this is not an issue to us. Included in the language of this bill is an obligation of the existing cable TV provider to allow connection to the competitor for PEG. If any disputes arise, then the city has the authority to decide the disputes. This proposal law spells out some of the requirements needed since the original law that was written and before competition was allowed and permitted in the Federal Telecom Act of 1996. In other words, we're still living in the 90s according to the federal law, and we're living in the 70s and the 80s according to the Minnesota Chapter 238. We're asking you to modernize the law that allows market-based competition and remove government management competition, whether it be local, regional, state, or federal, when there is more than one provider in the area. In summary, this bill represents basically and permits the city and the competitive video programming provider to negotiate terms and conditions that are unique to that city, including defining its service area. This ends my testimony. It's a privilege for me to testify in front of you. I stand by for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. South. Any questions? Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. South, so if I understand the technological technology behind this, we've got cable companies stringing cable that comes to my house, but we've also got, I got four pairs or four copper wires coming into my house with my dial tone on it. So you're telling me that there is an additional video provider that can ride over a carrier wave on those copper wires that the telephone company has to my place? Is that what we're working with here?
Mr. South.
To answer your questions, Mr. Representative, is that over the existing copper pair, the dial tone that you receive today is known as tip and rings. It's just two wires. You may receive four wires into your house, but for dial tone, there is only two wires. Over those two wires, you can provide voice, video, and data. Video up to 150 digital channels, data with speed greater than DSL speed, all on the same pair.
Cowabunga, Mr. Chair.
Can you get your question answered?
Yes, I
did. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a question about satellite TV. How does that fit into this competition with local cable?
Mr. South.
Representative, in some of the new housing developments in the areas that we provide telecommunications, about every third home is provisioned by that of satellite, utilizing the satellite dishes. They are a great competitor, but yet they are not regulated. They have no ties whatsoever under Chapter 238, the state statute.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. South. John Schultz. Is he here?
I'm not John.
You're not John. John
today,
Schultz
anyway.
Was actually the best man at my wedding. So I was looking for him. I didn't see him here. Maybe that was another John Schultz.
I would have if you asked me. I would have been.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself.
Good afternoon, Chair and committee members. My name is Carrie Rice, and I'm here today representing Hickory Tech. I appreciate the time this afternoon to tell you a little bit about my company and why we feel these changes to Chapter 238 would benefit both us and the citizens of Minnesota. If you're not familiar with Hickory Tech, I'll tell you briefly that we're the incumbent telephone company in most of Blue Earth County, and we have been that for 106 years. In addition to these strong roots as an incumbent, we're also a competitive telephone company, and we operate as a CLEC in eight southern Minnesota communities. Hickory Tech has an affiliate based in the Twin Cities here that sells telephone equipment. We're also an inter-exchange carrier offering long-distance services and an internet service provider. We employ 387 people in Minnesota, and though we're very small compared to some of our peers with national networks, we're proud to say that we're the largest telephone company headquartered in Minnesota. 3 years ago, Hickory Tech made a strategic decision to get into the video programming business. As you heard just a minute ago, the technology we employ enables us to provide high-speed internet, traditional voice service, and video programming over a single copper facility. This is why we hesitate to say that we operate a cable system, because it's much more than that. We made a significant investment constructing a head end in Blue Earth County, and we began offering video services to our customers in the Exchange of St. Peter. As you've also heard this today, that one of the challenges of offering competitive services is the obtainment of a franchise from the local franchising authority and their requirement under state statute to require us to serve the entire municipality or local franchise area. for a new entrant that can be a deal breaker to entering a new market and offering competitive services. We'll return now to our services in St. Peter. There, when we wanted to offer video services, we were able to agree to serve the entire municipal boundary because we'd already made the investment in facilities to offer telephone, DSL, dial-up, and long-distance services. We had all the facilities in place, but that's not always the case. In fact, as a competitive telephone company or a CLEC, Minnesota law gives us the ability to offer our services in areas of our own choosing, not in any historical or predetermined boundaries. Our offering of video services in St. Peter was a trial for us, and we feel that we were very successful. Since in the last year or two, we've been looking for markets where we could expand those services. Time and again, we're constrained by the city's need to require us to serve entire municipal boundaries. I'd like to briefly give you one more dramatic example of how current law prevented Hickory Tech from pursuing an opportunity. At the beginning of this year, Minnesota State University at Mankato released a request for proposals to offer video services to the residential dormitories on campus. In discussions with campus officials, it was stated that they'd been advised by the State Attorney General's office that any service provider who sought to bid on the contract would need to possess a cable franchise from the city of Mankato in order to avoid any possible litigation from the incumbent provider. The city, according to Chapter 238, would need to require us to serve the entire municipality. So, in order to respond to the request and offer state-of-the-art video services to a single campus, we would have had to commit to serving over 40,000 households in Mankato. It simply was not feasible. And the result? There was one bidder, the incumbent cable company, and any potential benefits to the university resulting from a fully competitive process are left unrealized. The changes to Chapter 238 that we are asking you to endorse are simple. It's not a complicated bill. It's not a wholesale rewrite of the cable laws. It simply gives franchising authorities some flexibility to negotiate what they think is best for their communities. In my mind, there's no doubt that competition for video programming is a good thing. But as a provider, I will still need to convince the franchising authorities of that. This does not remove the need to negotiate with the cities, and it's not a slam dunk for us. I think I'll stop there since you've heard what other things the bill does. I would just like to say that I did appreciate working with the League of Minnesota Cities and MACTA over the summer and their willingness to give and take with this language. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for the witness? Seeing none, thank you. Members, we have about 5 minutes left. I think most of the testifiers are from around here. If there's someone that's from out of town that came in just for this, that would want to testify today, speak now. All right. I don't see any. So John Schultz wasn't here. Jeff Luders?
I'm here.
Oh, you are here.
Yeah. How about?
And no, you were not in my wedding.
but if you're going to renew the vows, extend me an invitation.
All right, very good.
So,
welcome to the committee, Mr. Schultz. Please introduce yourself.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members of the committee. I am John Schultz. I'm the general manager for FTTH Communications, a small service provider based out of Roseville, Minnesota. You don't need to hear what Mr. South and what Ms. Rice told you about the competitive nature of the industry. Let me throw it to you from a slightly different angle today. I am not an incumbent telephone company. I'm not an incumbent cable TV company. I'm a small company with 6 employees as of yesterday, as I hired my 6th employee, providing internet service, telephone service, and video service over fiber to the home infrastructure to every home. So as Mr. South or Ms. Rice spoke to, providing the service over a copper twisted pair, we've taken what we think is the next technological leap in providing fiber to the side of every home. We were one of the first fiber to home suppliers in Minnesota. We also were one of the first builders of a switch digital video headend over fiber to the home in the United States. So we're trying to do things that people haven't done before. We're trying to operate a competitive company in a rather uncompetitive environment, to be perfectly honest with you. The way we operate our company is we serve residential communities of choice around Minneapolis, St. Paul. And that restriction in the franchise, where it's a whole city that you must overbuild and meet the existing company's franchise requirements, doesn't allow me to effectively look at expanding my business over the next few years, as I intend to do. one of the things that we're looking at is going into more communities, providing more people a specialized service that really fits their lifestyle, trying to tie people who are looking for security, looking for more bandwidth to their home and more services, and to be able to do that. What we truly feel is this is a step in the right direction to not just allow the people who are already incumbents and compete against other incumbents, but also to provide new competition, new people with new technologies and new ideas into the marketplace. Other than that, I strongly support what I've seen in the legislation. We have no problems working in the existing PEG and public access realm. Matter of fact, in Rosemont, Minnesota, where we provided our first service, we were able to negotiate with the city and with the school district an enhanced service, fiber to every school in that community, something different than Charter was actually willing to do in their existing franchise. So we're always looking for ways to increase our penetration in the community, look at new and different ways to improve the service to the community. So with that, I think I'll stand for questions if you have any.
Thank you. Any questions, committee members? Thank you, Mr. Schultz. Representative Westrom, I think our meeting time is coming to an end. What we'd like to do, I believe, with your blessing, Mr. Chair, is we'll lay this bill over till tomorrow, and we'll also then take up the other bills tomorrow and hear any further testimony at that time.
That's right, Mr. Chair. That's fine, and we'll just extend today's. What we didn't get through today, we'll come tomorrow, and this bill will likely come to a vote tomorrow, and we'll finish up then.
Very good. We'll lay over 2542, and this meeting is adjourned.